The following Dharma talk was given by Jodi Hojin Kimmel at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is the abbot of the Zen Center and head priest at Zen Mountain Monastery. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org/zcnyc. Thanks for listening.
Good morning, everyone. Nice to see you all. My talk's about patience, so thank you. It's really about patience. The hearth being where we're warmed and nourished. How do we combust in the hearth of our own body and mind? The hearth of our belly, the key. Our expression, where our expression arises from, the center of energy in our body, we call the hara. So I wanted to look at patience. I'll start with a story. There was once an old practitioner of the way who specialized in the practice of patience. And I think I chose this because of my own restlessness. And what a practice patience has been, the hot coals burning inside. So this practitioner of the way who specialized in the practice of patience, and after many years of hard work, they felt they had reached their goal, the perfection of patience. To announce this fact to the world, they set up a sign outside their hermitage that read, "A nature like ashes." And one day, a young traveler was passing down the road and was struck by the unusual sign and stopped to ask the owner what it meant. And the owner said, "It means a nature like ashes," the practitioner replied. "I beg your pardon," said the traveler. "Would you mind repeating that?" The sage says, "It reads quite clearly, a nature like ashes." "Oh," came the reply, "but what does it say?" "It says a nature like ashes." "Excuse me," said the youth, "but for some reason I can't quite make out the words. Would you be so kind to read them to me?" "They say," said the old practitioner with the calm demeanor of a patient person, "a nature like ashes." The conversation continued on in this vein for some hours until late in the day when the traveler said, "Would you be so kind, sir, to read the sign for me?" The sage, mustering all the force of his patience, said, "It says a nature like ashes, if you must know." "Yes," said the traveler. But what does it say? Please." "Damn it," exploded the sage. "I've told you once. I've told you a million times. It says, a nature like ashes. That's what it says." "I see," said the traveler as he took a step into the air and displayed the resplendent body of Avalokiteshvara Bodhisattva. "And there remains an ember or two in those ashes. Given another 20 years, perhaps you may cool off. Good person, you have to wait around a while yet and keep working. In time, we may meet again." Yes. Sound familiar? So in the Zen tradition, we are these bodhisattvas. The Buddha's on an altar here. Avalokiteshvara we see, who's the bodhisattva of compassion. And in the tradition, that these are just reminders, things that we can identify with as an expression of our true nature, our compassion as Avalokiteshvara bodhisattva, as a Buddha, an awakened being. That it's not outside of us, ever. And So we bow to the Buddha, we raise our hands, we raise our Bodhi mind, we raise that aspiration each time we go down, raise our mind to that aspiration to be a Buddha. Avalokiteshvara, as we chanted it in this morning in the Heart Sutra, is the Bodhisattva of compassion, sometimes is known as Kanan Bodhisattva or Kuan Yin, Chenrezig Tara. And the name means Avalokiteshvara, is the one who looks down upon the world and hears the sounds and the cries of the world. So in our life, how is it that we do that? We always feel Avalokiteshvaras around us, ones that hear our cry. Where is that for us when we listen or we act as that Bodhisattva? And Avalokiteshvara is constantly appearing, providing us many opportunities to practice patience, right? I'm sure you have a few in your office and in your house. And we are constantly challenged, often under the most unexpected circumstances. Patience is the third paramita. And the Sanskrit word is kshanti, K-S-H-A-N-T-I. And paramita is also a Sanskrit word, you know, gate, gate, para gate, para gate, para sam gate. Param means the other shore, and ita means to have reached. To have reached the other shore. And there is another meaning of paramita, which is the very best, the very unsurpassable best. So it refers to the very best patience, the unsurpassable patience. What could this be? And in that moment where we're ready to scream what it reads, and we really practice that, that's that reaching the other shore in that moment where we just don't unload our missiles on someone. They're already stacked up. I mean, we all got ammo, face it. We're loaded. One little button and pew, there it goes. And we're practicing so we can see where those triggers are and not shoot, not kill for our sake and for others. And when the Bodhisattva ideal was developed, there was a list of six unsurpassable ways that came into being as methods of training ourselves, as methods, not methods, but even who we are, our virtuous qualities. Giving, moral beings, morality, patience, effort, meditation, and wisdom. And the first three, it's interesting, giving, morality, and patience really have to, a lot to do with our relationship to others, how we relate to others. They all do in some way, but those specifically, that other people are involved in our practice because we're not alone. It's not just about me, though we act that way. And this is very much the Bodhisattva's way, right? The Bodhisattva is one who remains in the world to look down upon and hear these cries and to serve others, to actively engage with others so that we may cross over to the other shore together. Together. And this gives balance to what could otherwise be a very self-centered striving for our own realization. The Buddha was sometimes called he who is able to be patient. And his life, this life is sometimes referred to as the land of patience. This life is the land of patience. I was recalling this time when Bobby Rhodes, who's a Zen practitioner in the Kwan Yun school, came to the monastery, and she was a Zen teacher in that school, and I hadn't met many women teachers, and she's also a hospice worker. And she told this story, which I saw also repeated in an article, about her learning patience with just being with people who were dying and just being a presence and not trying to do too much, but just be patient and just be by their side in the room. And she was talking about during her work as a hospice nurse, she was surprised at all the various mental states that people had when they died that she was witnessing. And she first worked for an agency that was doing private duty care. And one of the first cases she had was caring for a patient in the hospital on the night shift. And it was really hard for her to stay up. And the nurses informed her that this was a very famous mafia boss that she was going to be sitting with. And he was in a coma and approaching the end of his life. And the first night that she stayed with him, it was really hard for her to stay awake. And she was just really restless and just wanted to go to sleep. And, you know, from all the practice, her body was very conditioned to be awake in the morning and not so much at night. So when she got off her first night shift, she went to her teacher, Master Seng San, and said, "How can I make myself stay awake the next night?" And he suggested that she sit up straight in her chair and just quietly inside recite the Great Dharani silently in her head. So she did that, and she used her beads, her mala beads, sat straight up, and she just stayed up by just repeating this mantra over and over. And about an hour into this, this man who was primarily unconscious for several days suddenly sat up in bed and said, "I don't know what you're doing, but stop it." And she was like, "Oh my God." He was in a coma for days. And he's, "I don't know what you're doing, but stop it." So she stopped and he went back into his coma. And she, when she got home, she told Master Sen Song what happened. He said, "Good demons hate the Great Dharani. His impatience and bad karma made you stop, but the mantra helped him." So she was a very new student that to experience that his consciousness picked up on hers, on her mantra practice, and let her see how much we are all connected. So I was speaking to someone about this word patience, and they really felt like shanti, you know, because it's a translation of a Sanskrit term, and that the Sanskrit term was much more fuller and captured the depth and breadth of it, which it kind of branches out more into acceptance, particularly as it relates to dealing with adversity, the patience of the dealing with adversity, also forbearance, tolerance, and endurance. All of these various interpretations which point directly at overcoming or being at one with our anger, resentments, hatreds, and dislikes, whether manifesting in our lives as other people, as ourselves, as situations, or maybe as beliefs that we find hard to accept or tolerate. How do we meet frustrations and difficulties? How do we accept injuries and insults? And there's an aspect of Kshanti which involves our capacity of forgiveness. And I know that's an interesting word, and we don't have to do it. It's something we each have to come to with things in our life. To forgive and pardon injuries and insults, imagined or real. In our life, Avalokiteshvara, Bodhisattva, is constantly appearing before us in a thousand disguises and challenging us to perfect this paramita. How do we practice when the least favorite person steps in view, even on television? Or do we watch TV? Even on computer? Who watches TV? I don't know. How do we practice that? You know, not to mention any names, but I'll mention a name. When our former president used to come out, I used to shut the volume off and I would just watch his body. So I could kind of get in there a little bit that way. It was very interesting to do, watch the body language speak. To just let it in, take it into view. Can we step back and welcome them as Avalokiteshvara, Bodhisattva? I mean, it's everyone, really. But there's work to do. Not everyone manifests as such, but it's there. Who can get out of great compassion? Who can get out of it? So there's a story, too, about a merchant named Funda, you may have heard this, who one day encountered the Buddha and his disciples. And when he heard the Buddha teach, he was so impressed that he immediately became a follower. Funda was brilliant and a wonderful person who eventually attained arhatship, which means they accomplished their own individual practice. So the Buddha instructed Funda to go to the people and expound the teachings. And he assigned Funda to Brooklyn and said to him, "Those people living there are rough, mean people. If they insult you, what are you going to do?" And Funda told Buddha, "I will consider them to be good people because they don't hit or kick me." And Buddha said, "If they hit and kick you, how are you going to react?" And Funda said, "I will still think they're good people because they don't beat me with a stick or throw stones." And Buddha went on, "Well, what if they throw stones or beat you with a stick? What will you do?" "I will still think they were good people because they didn't injure me with a dagger or a knife." And Buddha said, "If they do that, how will you react?" And Funda said, "I will still think they're good people because they do not kill me." Finally, the Buddha asked, "If they're going to kill you, what will you do?" And Funda replied, "I will still appreciate them. Among your disciples are many who are willing to die, willing to lose their lives because life is so painful. If they're going to take my life, I will be glad to let them." And Buddha said, "If you have that much patience, your mission will be successful." And indeed, according to the story, soon afterwards, Funda had about 500 followers. How about us? I know for me, sometimes just a small insult, intentional or unintentional, can give rise to a big upset. And I might carry that very long. It's getting shorter with practice. Using our precious energy, holding on this is my family. Some things, it's like years. There's like no getting through, just holding on to like an insult that happened like over a turkey or something, or something, a doorknob, I don't know. Really something small, you must say. Holding on, fueling the fire, keeping it going. Isn't this fire? The words patience, forbearance, and tolerance may seem passive to us. And this Black Hawk, a Cherokee Indian, said, constant motion seems more important than waiting, but waiting is the time to prepare. Waiting. So there's a part of patience that's not, it's active. It's still not in constant motion, but it's preparing to build the spirit, he says, and be rested and ready. When anxiety grips us, it uses energy, it wastes our time. So waiting creates a staying power, so that there's no need to retreat, no need to go backward. Much depends, he says, on whether our waiting is a pause before going on, or an inertia that puts us in a trance. When the body, mind, and spirit track together as a unit to move mountains, the waiting is only a prelude to action that makes up for any lost time. So the practice of kshanti, or patience, is not a passive practice. It gives us a chance to actively engage in dealing with our frustrations and angers. The character for patience, there's two characters. It's an arrow pointing to our heart in a corner. Those are the characters for patience. An arrow pointing to our heart, and we're in a corner. So not only does Avalokiteshvara appear before us, but we are nothing, we are ourselves, nothing but this bodhisattva. So how does this bodhisattva train? Well, the story of Funda brings my teacher to mind, Shugen Roshi. When I reflect on all the insults and injuries that he has endured, and how he endures them through our 30-some years together, spreading the Dharma, continuing to spread the Dharma, I admire his incredible patience. I've tested him incredibly. As Avalokiteshvara appearing in front of him. And part of that patience is, and we feel that in people, is they have a very broad vision. It's not narrow. It's a broad view of life. And I always, in those moments where I could feel myself tightening and ready to, like, do something to someone, and I feel his relaxation. What is he seeing? What is he seeing in that moment? What are those folks seeing when we see that kind of patience? What if we are impossible? What if when we are in impossible situations and we make no excuses and we don't defend, but instead simply acknowledge and accept the consequences of whatever we did. You know, there's that story of the Zen master. I don't know if it's a good one, just came to mind, but a baby was actually delivered to the monastery and somebody said it was his. And he said, if you say so. And he took care of it. Some years later, they came back over, and the person who had the child said it wasn't him. And he just took it. He didn't defend anything. He just said, okay, I'll raise it. What if we remembered that those who cause us pain are enduring the effect of certain causes and are in pain themselves? It's hard to remember that. It doesn't mean we let them close all the time. Boundaries are okay. But how do we do that? How do we create that? What is happening within us? Do we have to go into hate, defense, warding off? Or can we just say, that's good, that's good, and still see them in their painful situation? What if we remembered to reflect on our own actions and the sticky situation created by how we act, no matter how innocent we may feel in the moment? This is practice. This is like really taking these situations in and practicing them. And we get so many opportunities, don't we? I'm sure those of you who are parents know this quite well. Your little Avalokiteshvara is running around. So when we encounter painful situations, we might just slow down and step back and ask some basic questions about our practice. I'm learning to do this more and more. What have I been given? What have I been given? What is there being manifested that I find so difficult to deal with? So we can see, what is my intention? My intention, not anybody else's. What is my vision? And when I ask myself these questions, I also practice to keep it light. Light in the sense of keeping my answers short. Not to use the Dharma to beat up on yourself. Not to make ourselves feel bad or to do this to others. Nor should we make ourselves feel proud. We simply look at our experience. And that's Zazen. Just to simply look at our experience. Not judge. Not take out the measuring sticks. How we're doing. Not compare. But to see all that, just to simply look. Look at our experience. There's another famous story about patience. Now, why are there so many famous stories about patience? I'm sure we have a slew of them ourselves. But this is in the Lotus Sutra, Jifugyo Bodhisattva, which means never be disrespectful, or respect everybody all the time. So maybe somebody will get that Dharma name. Jifugyo Bodhisattva, never be disrespectful. So, and in the Lotus Sutra, it's called the Bodhisattva, never disparaging. I think Yunin might have spoke about this Bodhisattva too. And to whoever this Bodhisattva met, they would say, you are practicing the way of the Bodhisattva. In the future, you are sure to attain the way. Whoever they met. It's easy to say that to people who are nice to us. You are practicing the way of a bodhisattva. In the future, you will attain the way. People got sick of hearing it, and one day they actually threw stones at him and beat him up, saying such a nice thing. Kill this crazy guy, they were shouting. He ran away, and from a distance he shouted, you are practicing the Bodhisattva way, and in the future you will become Buddhas. And All his life he did this. So imagine the next person who triggers you and upsets you, and you say, I dare not hold contempt. You too shall become a Buddha. Try it. You'll like it. Or we can flip this around and look at what we find, why we find it so difficult to practice patience. We can look at our pride and our own lack of understanding what another person may be going through, at our own self-righteousness. And this leads to this other aspect of kshanti, or patience, forgiveness. Forgiving others for the wrongs they have done to us, real or imagined. But we have to begin with ourselves, don't we? We keep getting pointed that way in all these practices, all these taking care in our own house. What's going on in our own house? There's a meditation for this that I like. And it's not easy to do. And I don't always mean it. I sometimes have to fabricate it. I practice it whether I feel like forgiving or not. Because like I said, this word is, and the action of it is really very personal. I forgive myself for all the harm I've caused to myself and others, either intentionally or unintentionally. And I forgive others for all the harm that they have caused me, either intentionally or unintentionally. I accept the forgiveness of others for all the harm caused by me, either intentionally or unintentionally. You can find some of these or write them yourself. I combined that with things I was feeling and what was written. And meditations like this, or mantras like this, or sayings like this are used when we really don't feel like it, and when we do. But ways that we want to turn ourselves, that sometimes we have to just say it, say the direction we want to go in, because it's not quite ours yet. So whatever that might be for you. So we let this kind of mantra or meditation teach us and begin to open its possibilities. Because we're all in this boat together. It's a big boat. Crossing to the other shore together. Always together. No one goes alone. But it's a solo journey in many ways that we each have to continue step by step. It's really together, but very solo, just like your little island that you're sitting on. We're all in the Zendo, but everyone's got their own little pad. All an island, together. Training in patience, forbearance, and tolerance, and endurance. And we get impatient. We wish we could cross over sooner. We get angry. We lose our patience. We atone. And our atone, we atone means become at one with what's happened. And our heart opens a little bit. And we get frustrated. And we blame others. We blame the other person. We can say we're sorry. I'm so sorry. And our heart opens a little more. We can acknowledge our own intolerance. And our heart opens a little more. We want a situation to change in our life, but we have no control over it. We are humbled by the relentless honesty of living, and our heart opens a little more. This is the point of patience, the best, the very best, unsurpassable practice of patience. Just our heart opening. That's it. That's it. That's, I don't know, what does Hafiz say? The subject tonight is love. And that's all I think we should talk about until we die. Really. So, isn't this fire an invitation to the hearth of our practice, which has in that word hearth, here, heart, earth, heat, art, our whole bundle of humanity? This is the practice of the great compassionate Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara, not someone else's practice. It's yours and it's mine. Simply our own direct experience of our own lives. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about the Zen Center of New York City's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit our website at zmm.org/zcnyc.